bench, on the floor, inside the locker room, and in the stands. We're everywhere.
Never back off.
With everything you need to know about the association. This is Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome to Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you, coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, as the Raptors get set for their game on Friday night against the Pacers, coming off their win over the same Pacers team on Wednesday night. And what a thrilling win that was for Toronto. Down 11 with about 2.5 minutes to go, and the Raptors come back to win the game. An incredible comeback, and hoping, obviously, Raptor fans are, for a similar result on Friday night, as Toronto now searches for a 13th straight victory, which seems crazy. The 12 victories, Jonesy, not just a Raptors franchise record, but a Toronto sports franchise record, as the Leafs, the Jays, the Argos, you name it, nobody's ever done more than 11 in a row before the Raptors now, with 12 straight wins.
It's been quite a run, Eric, and I know a lot of people are going to, and you and I think back to our first days of doing the wrap back at Lord Stanley's Mug, when Toronto would win 4 or 5 games in a row, and the centers and the naysayers would call up and say, well, they didn't beat anybody, and I'm going to steal the thunder right now from those people. You're right, 9 of the 12 games, the teams have been under 500, but you can only play who they put on the schedule and only play who's in front of you. So, you know, the back part of that is, if they had lost to those teams, people would be howling.
Well, and I know we've been working together too long, because that's the point I was ready to jump in with, is that those same people that have those comments about, oh, they didn't beat anybody, would be the first ones to step up had they lost any of those games, right?
Absolutely. So give them credit. And look, let's face it, some of those games, last night being the prime one, the most recent one, people probably thought, well, it's not happening. The streak is going to end here. And they find a way to get it done. Great resiliency. When you look at the ranks of this team over the course of the streak, the way they've played in the fourth quarter, they have been absolutely tremendous. And, you know, this is not new, because you think back to years ago, the Raptors were the number one team for a few seasons in fourth quarter point differential. You know, and we, you and I used to joke about the phrase, never mind we the North, it's we the Fourth,
right?
Because of the way they would run people down in the fourth quarter. And they're doing it again. They were down 18 in the third quarter. You said it, down 11 into the fourth quarter, and, you know, made that comeback. You know, give the team credit. There's some resiliency there. There's some championship metal. Nick Nurse pulling the right strings, making substitutions, putting a press on. This is a solid team right now.
Well, and I mean, we continue to kind of harp the point too, and we should, because it's incredible what they've done with all of the injuries, with every key player outside of Terrence Davis, who you did not count on being a key player, and he's become that. Every key player missing significant time this season, and yet you still find a way to roll. And dare I say, not only every key player missing significant time, Jonesy, but key players missing significant time at the same time together. It's not just like one guy was out.
Yeah.
It's currently right now, you're missing Gasol and Powell. You are missing Ibaka and Lowry. You were missing, you know, Siakam and Van Vliet. You were missing Powell and Gasol. I mean, the list goes on of guys who have, again, multiple players who have been out missing time. So your lineup isn't just reacting to one. It's been reacting to two, and at times three and four, and dare I even say, I think at one point, 5 guys out of the lineup. And yet here we are with the best record in franchise history after 50-plus games, better than last year's pace, and now sitting in second place in the East. It's truly incredible what the team's been able to do.
Yeah, no, they've been really, really solid, Eric. And you know, it's you know, veteran leadership, I guess, as it were, when you look at the way Kyle Lowry played. He had a stretch of about 3 minutes yesterday in that fourth quarter where he just bullied Jeremy Lamb.
Yeah.
He was all over him on the defensive end. Lamb was frustrated, throwing his arms up, wanting calls, and Kyle Kyle would take the ball, and then he'd drive it down to the other end, lean his body into people and bounce off them and score under the basket. And that's, you know, that's the championship resiliency that was built last year. And last night, there was no Marc Gasol, no Norm Powell. and they were able to get it done. A great game from Kyle. Fred only had 10 points. Pascal was having a tough night. He found a way to get it going at the end. Ibaka comes with another 30-point game. So they're really figuring it out. And I guess the only thing that I'm waiting to see, because there's no question this team could win a championship, the only thing I'm waiting to see is, come playoff time, is there a guy that can step forward when they need to throw the ball to somebody?
Because that's like Kawhi did, right?
Like Kawhi did, yeah. That was the comforting thing that you had last year. He was proven; he knew how to do it. It's a little bit different this year. They know how to do it, but there's not one guy as of yet consistently proven to be able to. Here's the ball. Go get me a bucket.
Let me ask you this just to be, I don't even know. I was going to say be devil's advocate. I don't know if this is devil's advocate. Would you agree, Jonesy, that last year, as much as Kawhi 100% was that guy in the playoffs, he was also that guy throughout the regular season. As good as the Raptors were as a team, you know, as strong as Siakam played last year, as Van Vliet did, as you know, Lowry did, as Gasol did perhaps late in the year, as Ibaka did in stretches at times, there's no doubt that even during the regular season, it was really, for the most part, Kawhi was the one taking the shot more often than not in crunch time moments. And the team, as much as they played very well without Kawhi in those 22 games, it was still a team that was centered around him being the focal point most nights and him being the decision maker and the top dog every night. Whereas this year, the top dog's been 5, 6, 7 different guys at various points over the course of the season. You look down, and on one night, it could be Fred VanVleet that leads the way. Another night, it's Siakam. Another night, it's Lowry. Another night, it's Gasol. Another night, it's Ibaka. Another night, it's Powell. Another night, it might be to even Terrence Davis. And the reason I bring that up is I wonder if, because you have even more balance this year and you have even more guys contributing, if you ultimately have to have or need to have that one guy that can be the top dog in the playoffs because you have so much diversity and so much difference to your roster this year in terms of what it was last year. I don't know if that's valid or not.
No, I think it is. And like I said though, it's still a matter of somebody being able to do it in April, May, and June. So, look, you know, I know we're going to get into the trade stuff. The Raptors didn't make a deal. Some people will say, well, why didn't you bolster the lineup? Why didn't you shore it up? The more you think about it, like there's some championship chemistry going on here. And, you know, I love your phrase when you talk about filling one hole but creating another.
Yeah.
Is there really a hole to fill here? You'd like maybe another scorer or another shooter, but at the risk of getting that guy, do you – upset the chemistry and take away something that has been working right now? So, look, there's still the buyout market and the waiver wire. Some teams obviously did some stuff. I mean, we're going to talk about Miami and what Philly's tried to do in replacing, you know, the guys they lost last year in J.J. Redick and Jimmy Butler. If you're a Raptor fan, you have to feel that if this team gets healthy – and Nick Nurse has all the parts at his disposal, they could be dangerous come playoff time.
All right, so as Jonesy noted, of course, as you know, you're a basketball fan. That's why you're listening to the show. NBA trade deadline was today. It was earlier today, 3 o'clock Eastern, that the deadline came and went, and the Toronto Raptors did nothing. That said, while we were flying to Indianapolis, we find out that Bobby Webster, general manager of the Raptors, back in Toronto, making a number of comments to the media and his availability at the Raptors practice facility, among other things, noted that the Raptors had conversations, as I'm sure every team in the league did, Raptors had conversations, as Webster said, and I'm paraphrasing here, about trades that were big and trades that were small. But ultimately, nothing came to fruition. Nothing ultimately made sense for the team, so they decided to stand pat with what they had. And then, as questions came up about the buyout market, as Jonesy just noted, Webster said that he would like to see his team back healthy to get a greater sense of truly what they may need before going out and hitting the buyout market, if they choose to even do that. So that's kind of where things stand for Toronto at this point. Now, teams around them made moves, and we're going to go through most of the trades, or at least most of the significant trades that did go down over the course of the last 12 hours, 24 hours. But I would say off the bat, Philly did little to nothing. Boston did nothing. Milwaukee did nothing. The teams around Toronto, for the most part, stood pat outside of Miami. And I like the moves the Heat made, but dare I say, Jonesy, that when you look at this, how many times have I said dare I say so far in this show? I got to get off that. It's become a crutch here in the first 8 minutes of the show.
It's all good.
I will say, I don't know that a lot of teams got that much better. When you think really only one team made moves, and as much as I like the addition of Andre Iguodala, and certainly Iguodala and Jay Crowder together, I don't know. Is Miami that much better today than they were yesterday? I think they're better, but I don't know if it's suddenly, oh my gosh, that's the second team in the East. They're better than Toronto and fear the Heat. I think that the Raptors are still in the exact same mix with the exact same group of teams, with the exact same questions and reasons to be optimistic and reasons to maybe fear that they did 24 hours ago.
And I will say that, Eric, I agree. Look, Miami is better. I will say that. They have some more experience. Some of the young guys that they were playing in, you know, Kendrick Nunn and Tyler Hero and some of the guys that were playing really well for them were young.
Yeah.
And we always say this, a Friday night in February is very different than, you know, game four in April or May. And Hero, Nunn, you know, they may not have, even Bam Adebayo, may not have the same level of experience that a Jimmy Butler does.
Yeah.
And now an Andre Iguodala and a Jay Crowder have in the playoffs. So they got better in terms of physical personnel with, you know, wing people to play to 3-and-D guy like Crowder. Iguodala is a former finals MVP. Like, there's no doubt they got better, but they also improved from an experience standpoint, and I think that's the biggest thing. And when I look at, like, Toronto and Boston that didn't make a lot of moves, they know they've got experienced guys. I mean, that was a young crew. I mean, my question about Boston is that was a young crew that went through the playoffs two seasons ago and you know, took LeBron and company to the Eastern Conference Finals and Tatum and Brown, and they were young. They were rookies. It's their third year now. This will be their third year in the playoffs. But can they recapture with Kemba Walker, who hasn't had a lot of playoff experience, that chemistry to move them forward? The Raptors do have all those guys from last year. With the addition of Terrence Davis, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, who will be new in the mix, you still have Kyle, Fred, Norm, Marc Gasol, Serge.
Pascal.
That's six guys. Yeah. OG didn't even play.
Yeah.
So, like, you still have three or four guys, but you've got a solid core group of guys that understand what it's about in playoffs. Philadelphia, with their moves, you know, they went out and got Alec Burks and Glenn Robinson III. They probably realized they're going to need some more shooting. And as much as everybody loved the get of Al Horford, and I did too, they still lost Jimmy Butler and J.J. Redick. And now they're trying to replace some of that, at least some of that, by getting those two guys.
So over the course of the show tonight, we're going to talk about the NBA All-Star Game with the draft for Team LeBron and Team Giannis. We're also going to talk about the rumors and the rumblings that have circled over the last 36 hours, 48 hours, with the Toronto Raptors and Masai Ujiri specifically, as it relates to the New York Knicks or not. But as we've done so much over the course of the first 10, 12 minutes of the show, it's NBA trade deadline day, so we're going to go over some of the deals right now. And I should mention, Quinn Buckner will be joining us on the program, as well as Jonesy had a chance to hook up with him. Let's go through some of the deals, and perhaps the biggest move of the day we will actually talk about second. Let's discuss the Miami Heat, seeing as we were just talking about Toronto and the Heat and the move that they made. Dion Waiters, Justice Winslow, and James Johnson to the Memphis Grizzlies for Andre Iguodala, Solomon Hill, and Jay Crowder. Now, the interesting thing here is then Minnesota gets involved as then they acquire Johnson, James Johnson, from the Grizzlies in exchange for Gorgui Dieng. So a lot of moving parts there, and Minnesota very active at the deadline. We'll get to them in a second. When I first heard, Jonesy, the Iguodala to Miami, I was looking short and long term. I'm thinking, all right, there's no denying. Adding a finals MVP and adding a player of Iguodala's caliber is no doubt a good thing for Miami. but I was shocked that it came at the cost of a solid young player in Justice Winslow. So to me, I was actually leaning that trade in the direction of the Memphis Grizzlies. Then as more details come out and you hear that it's Jay Crowder and Solomon Hill and Andre Iguodala added to that Heat team, it's like, okay, hold on a second. This is a pretty good deal for Miami. I mean, I think it's one of those rare trades where both teams come out looking pretty good.
Are you surprised that Pat Riley gave up a little bit of the future for the current? I mean, he of the always, you take the seeds, I'll take the tree. There was a tweet out there from my brother Mark, who we'll see tomorrow night doing the game here in Indiana, that said, Pat Riley is such that he's always trying to win, and it kind of perpetuates the idea of winning and the winning culture. And he's almost the opposite of the process and building for the future. He doesn't go very long before he's back in the mix. And I'm not surprised that, you know, they went out and made that deal. And as you said, they sacrificed Justice Winslow. If he wasn't coming along, or he wasn't, you know what, let's stay in the present and we'll worry about him later. And who knows, maybe he'll boomerang back to us at another time when he's more developed and, you know, more accomplished and more skilled and a better player. But for now, we're trying to win here. And that's what Pat Riley's always been about.
All right, let's talk about Jonesy mentioned, and so we'll discuss it quickly. The Philadelphia 76ers, they trade James Ennis to the Magic for a second-round pick, but then also, as Paul noted a couple of moments ago, acquiring Glenn Robinson and Alec Burks from the Warriors in exchange for picks. Interesting that I don't know if it's fair to call it shuffling of deck chairs, but you're kind of moving some of the smaller parts, trying to shore up your second unit, which is something that Philly did a couple of years ago when they made the acquisitions late in the season in picking up Marco Bellinelli. And why am I brain cramping?
Ilyasova.
Actually did seem to help in that run for Philadelphia. And those were guys that seemed to be kind of missing for Philly last year when ultimately they were trying to go at it against the Raptors and bow down to Toronto in seven games. And I just wonder about the trickle-down effect of, as you say, not just missing J.J. Redick and Jimmy Butler and trying to now fill the gap, the void, with an Al Horford, but you're still trying to shore up that depth and those kind of complementary pieces around that 1-2 punch of Simmons and Embiid. And I still come back to, I don't know if those two guys long-term are the right fit, the right mix for one another for this team. I'm not necessarily advocating a trade per se,
right.
But I just wonder long-term if this is the right fit for long-term success in Philadelphia.
They're sure banking on it right now, Eric. Trying to, and I give them credit for trying to make it work, surrounding them with the right people. But, at some point, when do you say we've got two guys that are number one guys or want to be number one guys, and we're going to have to work around it. So, look, I give Philadelphia credit. The fans endured and suffered there for a long time with both of those guys, Simmons and Embiid, hurt for a while before finally getting into the lineup and winning. And I'm sure they were heartbroken last year when Kawhi Leonard beat them in Game 7. And that, you know, is something that's going to be used as motivation this year. But it's motivation for everybody and people that play against them too. So let's see what Philadelphia does. I would say to this point of the season, they have been a little bit disappointing where they sit, you know, in the standings. They're not the team that everybody thought they would be. And, you know, that just comes down to player performance.
All right. There's two trades we should mention before we take the break here. Three. We can glaze over this one perhaps a little bit because it involves two non-playoff teams and it certainly does help the Los Angeles Clippers in their pursuit in the Western Conference. But the Clippers, Knicks, and Wizards on a three-team deal with Marcus Morris and Isaiah Thomas going to the Clippers, Jerome Robinson to the Wizards, while the Knicks receive Mo Harkless and a 2020 first-round draft pick, which is pretty damn good, I think, overall, for giving up Marcus Morris, who was going to be a free agent and I would guess was not going to be re-signing with the Knicks. And you end up walking away from that with Mo Harkless and a 2020 first-rounder. So the Clippers, they bolster their lineup, adding yet another piece to an already deep team in Morris. My understanding, based on everything we both have read and everybody probably has heard already as well, Isaiah Thomas set to be waived by the Clippers. So hard luck continues for him as he continues to sort of bounce around damn near half the league, it seems, over the course of his career. But L.A. gets better. A confusing one to me, and it sounds like it might just be more money than anything else, as Andre Drummond had the opportunity perhaps to pick up a clause in his contract, an option that would have paid him close to $30 million next season. But before he did that, the Pistons dumped him and got very little in return for Andre Drummond, a guy that can go out and give you, 20-20 damn near every night or on a lot of nights. The Pistons shipped Drummond to Cleveland and John Henson, Brandon Knight, and a second-round pick in 2023 go to the Pistons. That seems like a brutal return for a two-time All-Star and Andre Drummond, if you ask me. And I'm shocked that there wasn't a corresponding move from the Cavaliers, and I'm sure they tried, with either Kevin Love or Tristan Thompson, because now you got Kevin Love, Tristan Thompson, and Andre Drummond on that team, and they're just wallowing in the East.
Look, both of those teams are looking forward. I can only anticipate that the Detroit Pistons are going to play differently. They'll wait for Blake Griffin to get healthy. He had the surgery.
Yeah.
He is a guy that can play on the perimeter, and they're going to move forward with the money that they're out from and try to get, players to play that style, free agents to fit that style. And they may not necessarily be seeking A-list free agents. Maybe some of those under-the-radar guys that could be role players to fill in and play the style with Blake Griffin. Going back to the Clippers, they got another dog, man. They got another tough guy in Morris. And you think about it, you put Morris on the floor from a defensive standpoint with Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, Patrick Beverley.
Yeah.
Like, as we need to talk to our man Rex Kalamian, who used to run the defense for the Raptors, running the defense for the Clippers. You're going to have a tough time scoring, with, like I said, put those five out on the floor. Morris, George, Leonard, Patrick Beverley, and Montrezl Harrell. You're undersized a little bit. You're probably good for switching for the most part, but teams are going to have a tough time against you. So that I think that makes them a little bit better. And like you said, to get a first-round pick, and it doesn't matter whose it is, if it's one of those ones that's been passed around.
It's a first-round pick.
It's a first-round pick. Yeah.
All right, we got to take the break here, but we have to talk about the biggest trade, and we should have done this probably right off the top, but Minnesota has not been hiding the fact that they have long coveted D'Angelo Russell, and they finally got their man as Golden State sends Russell to Minnesota in exchange for Andrew Wiggins, Warriors also getting a 2021 top three protected first-round draft pick and a 2021 second-round pick. I would also say pretty damn good return for a guy that was probably just a rental for you anyways in Russell, because at least as long as they're healthy, Steph Curry's running the show there.
Yes.
Klay Thompson's going to be in the backcourt, and Draymond Green's going to be up front at the four. And now Andrew Wiggins, what he probably needed, Jonesy, more than anything else in the world, is a fresh start. And he gets a fresh start with the Golden State Warriors. He has to put in a little bit of time for a couple of months here to end out this season. But then next year, when everybody's healthy, and you're now the starting three alongside Curry, Thompson, and Draymond Green, hell, what a chance for Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah, no, and Eric, I know we're going to get into this, but that gives him the opportunity to play without the pressure, too.
Yeah.
People say, well, he's not a number one guy. Well, he doesn't have to be. Now he can be a number three or a number four, and
totally.
that's pretty good for him. And as you said, the Golden State Warriors, today was like draft day for them. They're starting to retool for next year, and you can see that by the moves.
All right, we're going to take the break. When we come back, Quinn Buckner plus reaction from the All-Star Draft earlier tonight with Team LeBron and Team Giannis. And we'll also talk about Masai Ujiri and the rumblings out of New York, which seem to have, as quickly as they heated up, they very quickly quieted down. We'll talk about all that and more coming up on Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
This is Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you, coming to you from Indianapolis as the Raptors get set for the Pacers on Friday night. Again, later in the show, we'll talk about the rumblings that have been coming out of New York over the last 24, 36 hours. And those may have quickly quieted almost as quickly as they heated up. And we'll get to that in a moment. Plus, Jonesy's conversation with Quinn Buckner. But, Jonesy, before we get to that, the draft, the All-Star draft was earlier tonight. Team James, Team Giannis, Team LeBron, Team Giannis. Anthony Davis, the number one overall pick by LeBron James. Joel Embiid goes second. Kawhi Leonard third. Pascal Siakam, the fourth overall selection in the All-Star draft to Team Giannis. And then as the teams were selected and we got to the reserves, et cetera, as well, turns out Kyle Lowry ends up on Team Giannis as well. So we were wondering, and I even said to you as we were watching together, oh, it looks like Pascal and Kyle are going to be on opposite teams, because it sure looked like LeBron needed some point guards on his squad after Giannis ended up walking away with both Kemba Walker and Trae Young among the starters. But as it turns out, Kyle Lowry ends up on Team Giannis. So last year, if you remember, if I'm not mistaken, Kawhi and Kyle played on opposite teams. But this year, Kyle and Pascal together. And Nick Nurse will have his work cut out for him, to say the least, because Team LeBron, Anthony Davis, Kawhi Leonard, Luka Doncic, James Harden, Damian Lillard, Ben Simmons, Russell Westbrook, Chris Paul, Jason Tatum, Nikola Jokic, and Domantas Sabonis. I mean, that is a stacked team. I mean, we're talking all-stars. Not like Team Giannis has got stiffs by any means, but certainly the top dogs, a great, great portion of them seem to be playing on Team LeBron.
Well, yeah, and the one thing I will say, when you look down at Team Giannis, and I'll put all these names in a bag, Kyle Lowry, Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, Kemba Walker, Pascal Siakam, Donovan Mitchell, those guys all play really hard.
Yeah.
So whatever people might look at in terms of a talent deficit or a perception of maybe not as talented or skilled or big names, you got some guys that play really hard. I mean, you got Kyle Lowry and Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo on the same team. You know, and like I said, guys like Kemba Walker, Donovan Mitchell, like, they get after it too. So it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to be able to chat with Nick over the next little while about, you know, I know it's an exhibition and it's a showcase, but you want to win.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to win. You're going for the fun. You're going to be around these people. But the bottom line is, you want to walk away saying, well, and my team won too.
Well, in the new format, which I don't like at all, I think it's a little convoluted. I appreciate that it came from the heart, and the idea was there, at least the attempt at idea in trying to honor, you know, Kobe, et cetera. I'm not a big fan of these sort of, essentially, it's like four mini games by breaking down quarter by quarter and who wins each quarter and then the total score and adding 24. I think it's a little convoluted, but it may play into guys playing harder, to your point, because you're trying so hard to win each quarter individually, and the money that's involved going to charity may entice the players to play that much harder as well. All right, the last pick in the draft overall was Domantas Sabonis. I use that as a segue. Jonesy, you had a chance to chat with, one of the all-time great basketball minds, Quinn Buckner.
Yeah, Quinn Buckner and Eric, you know, we look at the fact that we're fortunate in Toronto to be around a guy like Wayne Embry, who was a pioneer. I mean, we're into February. It's Black History Month. He was one of the guys that helped establish the Players Union. He was the first African-American general manager. But as somebody watching Quinn Buckner's career growing up, here's a guy that he's got the trifecta, man. He's won an NCAA championship. He's won an Olympic gold medal. He's won an NBA championship. He's played with great players, you know, with Larry Bird, with great Olympians. He's been on a Bob Knight coached Indiana national championship team. So getting to sit down and talk with Quinn about the East. We didn't really get into the West, but we talked about the East. Of course, we did it a little bit before the trade deadline was finalized, but we took a spin around the East, and it was very interesting to hear somebody who knows the game that well in his comments. Quinn, let's talk about the East. I look at the way the East sits right now in terms of standings, and a lot of people expected Milwaukee to be where they are, but a couple of teams that were involved, but I don't think anybody expected the Raptors to be where they are.
I didn't.
And I don't think anybody expected Indiana to be as good as they are either.
Well, Indiana is probably as much a surprise. The Raptors you were concerned about, because when you lose an MVP, you lose a significant part of your team, not just your offense or your defense. And Kawhi, having led the Raptors to the NBA championship, that's a big loss.
Yeah.
And to the credit of the staff and Larry Tannenbaum and Masai Ujiri and everyone, they've held this together, and it's been it actually has been one of the, I think, great stories of sport.
To why,
Quinn? A team that loses an MVP candidate and still maintain a high level of play. Because it's hard to do in our business because you always have people transitioning and in and out. And the Raptors have had that, too. They've just been able to get those people incorporated better in the system. But in addition to the Raptors, the Pacers have had, I think, a good year. But I got to tell you the other team that's probably shocked people. Miami is playing some huge basketball. Yeah. You know that. And Jimmy Butler, having left Philadelphia and gone there, have made a difference. What the Pacers have been able to do is find a bunch of guys who have accepted a role, and Victor's been out. He will be back, but he's back here now. And now, so we get two All-Stars for Paul George, which makes that's a heck of a deal. But we've got a lot of guys that accept roles. And T.J. Warren became a very good scorer for us and has been solid. Malcolm Brogdon is as good a leader, I think, as I've ever seen in this business, and is a very good basketball player. And everybody else is just trying to find their way into what the Pacers have done and been able to actually stay pretty level to what we were last year when we had Victor. So it's been pretty impressive.
I want to get back to the Pacers in a second, but I want your thoughts on Philadelphia. Have they really been as disappointing as everybody thinks they have been? Or are they still looking? Are they still searching? Do they need a piece? What your thoughts on Philadelphia, Quinn?
They got to mature. I don't think it's any much more difficult than that. Right. Got some talented players, and you can see during the course of the game where there's concern about role definition,
right,
whose team it is, who should get the ball, that kind of thing. And I don't sit in their locker room, but I've been around this long enough to watch. And you can see there's a disjointedness about them.
Right.
And so the question is, who's going to just accept the role that they have, and how are they going to sacrifice? Because this is about sacrifice. They've got talent. And that's what I see. And I honestly think, and this is strictly conjecture, and this is one that may get me, I think Jimmy Butler saw it.
Yeah.
So he left.
Yeah.
Because there's too much talent that you just leave. He needed a certain kind of culture to play the way he plays, and Miami has it. Philly may get there, but they've got to grow into that. That's experience, and right now they've got really good players that are trying to gain some experience, and that's just the difference.
People would be wrong to sleep on them, though, going forward into the postseason if they're able to find some of the things that you have talked about, correct?
No, wait a minute. They got players now.
Yeah,
these guys can play.
Yeah.
You know, you look up, Joel is probably as tough as anybody. Jokic is really good in the post. Joel can play inside, outside. Ben Simmons, why people have complained about Ben Simmons shooting the three. I get it. I get the analytics. The guy is 6'10 and gets to the rim. You stop him from getting to the rim, then tell him about shooting threes.
Right.
He gets where he needs to go.
Yeah.
Tobias Harris is a good player. And I think Brett Brown does a really good job with him. But they also have had to deal with some injuries, so you have the inconsistency of play based upon the fact you can't keep guys on the floor. They've had some challenges. Again, you just have to grow and get through all of those things, and I think that's really what they're working through.
I'm with Quinn Buckner, TV analyst for the Pacers. Also, for those of you that don't know, an Olympic gold medalist, an NCAA champion, and an NBA champion. That's the trifecta right there. Quinn, let's talk about the Pacers. And a lot of moving parts at the trade deadline, but with Victor coming back, Oladipo coming back at the time that he is, that's akin to getting a new guy in at the trade deadline, giving him maybe 25, 30 games to try to get reacclimated with his team. I don't think anybody wants to see Indiana in the first round of the playoffs.
Well, I don't know if they want to see the Pacers or not. I think the Pacers are going to be a tough team to play against. I don't think there's any doubt about it. I think your analysis of getting Victor back on the floor is accurate. But getting him back on the floor and getting him back to being Victor is what you're working on now.
Right.
So I don't know what they're doing in the front office. I stay away from that purposely. Yeah. But what you have, you've got to be able to see what you got. And you can't do that until you get him playing back to what he is, knowing what you have, and then putting all those pieces together. I like, so far, the guys. I like the culture. I've always liked the culture, or I wouldn't be so blessed to be a part of it. But just getting guys healthy. But when I look at Victor and Sabonis and what they're doing, again, we talk T.J. Warren, Jeremy Lamb, yeah, and Justin Holiday has been a surprise.
Yeah.
Everybody knows
yeah.
about his brother Aaron.
Yeah.
But Justin has been consistent in his game. So you've got a lot of guys that have made contribution, and that's what you've got to have. You don't, if you don't have a big-time player, as it were, and then we think Vic is our big-time as Sabonis, you really got to have a lot of guys that buy into the system, and I think that's what we have.
Interesting how people are reevaluating their perspective on the trade with Paul George. Now, I mean, the way Victor's played, and I mean, he's hurt, he's getting back, and now with Sabonis being an all-star, people thought that there was a little bit of underselling going on when, in fact, right now, Paul George is gone from, he's no longer in Oklahoma City, and they've had to turn him around into other things. But I think the Pacers made out pretty well.
Who wouldn't think they were made up? You know, it's interesting because there were a number of people who attacked the Pacers and Kevin Pritchard, and I think you got to give Kevin Pritchard the credit. You give Kevin Pritchard the credit for it. What the Pacers wanted to do is get two guys that were potential all-stars. And you get two all-stars basically for Paul George. That's a tremendous, tremendous deal.
Yeah.
Now, Paul George is an all-NBA player. I don't mean just an all. He's a perennial all-star, and he's one of the top 10 or 15 players in the league. But when a decision is made, the way the game is now, when guys make decisions, not unlike what happened here in Toronto.
Yes.
Guy makes a decision to leave. If there's some way you can make that work for you coming back the other way, you do. Kevin just made it work in a big way, and the Pacers are better for it.
Quinn, I want to move on to one team that we have, a couple teams that we haven't touched on. First, starting with the Celtics. They had a lot of, you know, to go back to your word, a lot of disjointedness last year, it seemed like, with Kyrie Irving in that locker room. Kemba Walker gets substituted. You can debate whether the ability is the same, but they seem like a team that's much more cohesive than they were a year ago.
It's interesting in the way you put it, and I know what you mean, but let me put it this way. There's no debate about the ability. Kyrie is a better player.
Right.
The question is, does it make that team better? Because everybody is different in a different system.
Right.
Kemba seems to work better from a chemistry standpoint.
Right, right.
And I know that's what you meant, and I wanted to make sure people understood that clearly is what you meant. Yeah, and because of that, they're playing better. Because people, mistakenly or not, always feel like what makes a team good is always about talent. It's not.
Right.
It's about being part of a unit and what's the best way to put that together. And the Celtics now are a really good team. But let's look at it. They got a couple of things that have happened different. Jaylen Brown is better than he was last year.
Yes, he's improved. Yes.
And Gordon Hayward is better than he was last year.
Healthy.
So, exactly. But it took him a year to do that. That's the way that beast goes. So that adds to the fact that you now maybe feel like you've got a different chemical makeup or a culture in the locker room. And I think all of that has helped Boston be what they are.
We talk about Milwaukee and we know how good they are. I mean, the last teams that went 43-7 after the first 50 all won the NBA championship. So Milwaukee falls into that category. They'll be looking for the championship. But I still look at the East, Quinn. And without really any, with Kawhi gone, without any really proven playoff people, I still think the East is wide open. I really, really do.
You and I disagree. Milwaukee's just that good.
They are.
Yeah, they're just that good. They've got a depth, but they got experience depth. When you win in a championship, what was unique about what happened in Toronto is you didn't have the playoff depth that you normally, the playoff experience that most teams have. These guys do. And they've got one of the top two or three players in the league. That makes them the team that's out front that everybody's chasing. Now, if you want to look at it from there on back, you're looking at something entirely different. And I think that's where we're on the same page. I just think Milwaukee is head and shoulders because you can't do anything with Giannis and you have a hard time keeping them from what they do. They shoot threes extremely well. They play defense at a high level. That puts you at a disadvantage when you play against Milwaukee.
How much, last thing before we go, Quinn, how much did they gain last year, Milwaukee, in terms of experience in losing to Toronto? I mean, they always say you lose before you win. What did that teach them in your eyes?
Well, it taught them how much better they had to be. That's what experience teaches you. That you've got to be better, you've got to be better prepared physically, and you got to be better to absorb some of the things that happen mentally and be better to bounce back. And they're better prepared for that because they not only either have done it on occasion or they watched Toronto do it, as it were, last year.
Quinn, always great to talk with you, and we look forward to seeing you down the road.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
That was Jonesy with former NBA player, longtime broadcaster Quinn Buckner. When we come back, we'll close up this edition of Hoops, and we'll talk about Masai Ujiri, the Raptors, and the stretch drive for Toronto. It's Hoops from Indianapolis on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
This is Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. We went a little heavy tonight. Sorry for that, folks. So the last segment here is going to be pretty tight. We probably would have done an entire show on this had the rumblings continued to percolate and simmer over the last 12 hours, 18 hours or so. But it seems like as hot as the rumor was, it's dying down because now it sounds like the New York Knicks and all the chatter about them trying to make yet another run at Masai Ujiri and trying to pry him from Toronto may not happen. As now there's a lot of talk that James Dolan and the Knicks seem to have their eyes on one of the super agents in the NBA in Leon Rose. Nothing's been finalized yet, at least at the time that we're having our conversation right now. But if Rose ends up taking over kind of in the model of what some other franchises have done, in the NBA, Jonesy, it certainly, takes the heat off the Toronto Raptors, but it still begs the question, all right, when's the contract extension going to be offered to Masai, if it hasn't already? And is he interested in signing? And does he want to be here long term, et cetera? Or do you just say, no, you're letting this play out and, wait until his deal's up at the end of next season? But the problem with that is then your president's contract is up at the time where you're trying to hit the market with a Giannis available and other big names, et cetera. This is something to me that needs to be done, if not now, this coming summer, so that you're not going into the final season, let alone that last summer, et cetera. It's something that needs to be resolved because there's a lot of questions around the Raptors right now. As good as things are going, at the end of this season, Marc Gasol, Serge Ibaka, Fred VanVleet, all free agents, end of next year, Kyle Lowry, the money to be spent, the free agent market, as I said, with Giannis. There's a lot of stuff going on that affects your current but also your future, and you need to know that you've got your management team and arguably the best executive in the league in place.
Yeah, no, I agree. And look, I think the tip-off was that Scott Perry didn't get an extension in New York to run things. Had he gotten that, had he received that, I would have said, okay, they're just going to let this guy, dabble with this for 2 years and bite the bullet and do the rebuild and then try to go after Masai. But the fact that, as we've talked about, that Leon Rose might be going in there, James Dolan looks like he's going to get after it right now. Now, that does not preclude him from, as he's done before, firing people to go after somebody else. So,
Leon Rose could try to still hire Masai Ujiri.
Right, right.
Who knows?
Right. And from the Toronto standpoint, Eric, I agree. Some things need to be put in place to keep this thing going. Toronto's on a run. You and I know this. Excuse me. The window doesn't stay open for a long time. And when you've got the window open, you've got to do your best to keep it open before you have to, try and build it again. And Toronto's in a good spot right now. We don't know if there's been a contract offered, if one is imminent. I just seem to think, though, there is an ease between Toronto and a familiarity between Toronto, upper management and Masai Ujiri, and all of the things that he's put in place. And what I worry about is not Masai leaving. Yeah, you worry about that, but it's who he takes with him that knows the plan. It's like when a coach leaves and he takes all his assistants because they work together and they know the plan. And it's Masai and Bobby and like all the people, Dan Tolsman and all those other people. That's when your infrastructure really breaks down.
And I will say this as well, just to close up the show. And I said this a couple of days ago on the air with Jeff Blair. I think you would agree with me. To be completely fair to this whole thing, it hasn't been talked enough about, and that's why I want to make sure that I at least put it out there. Masai Ujiri has not said anything. He hasn't said he's unhappy. He hasn't said he wanted to leave. He's only ever said glowing things about Toronto. And for that matter, Larry Tannenbaum, as recently as early December, told Michael Tracos in the papers and post-media in the Toronto Sun, or I believe, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he essentially said, Masai is not going anywhere. Masai is happy here, and we will make sure we do everything to keep Masai here. And basically, we're ready to pay, pony up, whatever it may be. We believe Masai is going to be here long term. So from Toronto's perspective, they're at least trying to paint this as there is no story. It's just the rest of the world reacting to, oh, here they come again, trying to make a run. And that's what happens when you've got talented people. You're wanted as a commodity, and other clubs are going to want you, especially clubs that have struggled that are trying to turn themselves around. We'll leave it at that. Raptors and Pacers on Sportsnet 590 The Fan on Friday night. Myself, Jonesy, will have the call for you as the Raptors look for a 13th straight victory. Thanks for tuning in to Hoops from Indianapolis right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.